Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman V20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20 volt max XR 4 amp hour battery kit. Dad knows our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Andrew McCarthy, a distinguished veteran prosecutor for the Department of Justice and now a commentator about the present scandal over the indictment of the former president of the United States by the Department of Justice. We turn to items that Andy's been filing at the National Review Online. I welcome you all to read along, because Andy's dealing with many of the remarks on the sidelines by commentators, by pundits, by interrogation on TV. We begin with the argument looking at the Trump indictment. Isn't this Presidential Records Act? Doesn't that cover the documents that have been illustrated with repeated photographs in a Mar-a-Lago bathroom and in a Mar-a-Lago stage, sort of scattered around the way my records are? Andy, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. The Presidential Records Act, as I understand your reading, it's a very specific application to records generated by the president. What does that mean, Andy? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I think maybe the easiest way to explain it is what the Presidential Records Act doesn't apply to, because then I think that makes, once you have that, I think it makes what seems dense a lot easier. The Presidential Records Act does not apply to agency records. It only applies to what would be, what the statute defines as presidential records, which are basically materials that are generated by the president and his staff, either presented to him or generated by him in order to conduct his business day to day. And when you get into the category of what a presidential record is, then you have the subset of what is a personal record. The personal records don't have to be archived. Presidential records do have to be archived at the National Archives. But you never even get to the Presidential Records Act if what you're dealing with is agency records. And just to be clear about this, John, because I really don't think it's that hard to follow, I'm going to read you the relevant section of the definition of presidential records in the Presidential Records Act. It says that such records do not include documentary materials that are official records of an agency as defined elsewhere in federal law. And that definition talks about exactly what you think a government agency is, whether it's a department or an agency of government that conducts regular business and keeps records of its activities. So in the Mar-a-Lago case, what we're dealing with are agency records. Specifically, what's at issue are intelligence reports generated by U.S. spy agencies that direct themselves to things like the military vulnerabilities of the United States, the military vulnerabilities of other countries, and the like. They're obviously not presidential materials. And that becomes laughably obvious when you look at what the Presidential Records Act says about personal records that a president is allowed to keep, as opposed to presidential records that have to be archived. Personal records that a president is allowed to keep are in the nature of like a diary or a journal, which these obviously are not. But again, it's kind of beside the point, because since they're agency records, the Presidential Records Act really doesn't have any bearing on this.
The tapes of the Richard Nixon investigation, Watergate, I understand that those are the presidential records. Is that why he was to keep them? Is that relevant here, that he kept documents that were needed by the Department of Justice to go forward? How does that confuse the issue, Andy?
John, it's kind of a cart and horse issue. It was the Watergate scandal that caused Congress to enact the Presidential Records Act.
I see. So that was before the dawn of civilization. I understand.
Right.
So now we're going to the protest made that this is ridiculous because the president did not spy on anybody. He's not a spy. This is not espionage. This dates from the First World War. Woodrow Wilson was in the White House. It's called the Espionage Act. But the 37 counts include the Espionage Act because there are documents that connect to the national security. And they're not classified. They don't need to be classified to satisfy the Espionage Act. Is that correct, Andy?
That's correct, John. They have to be national defense information, which is a broader category. Well, it's a different category than if we had a Venn diagram, there'd be a lot of overlap, but it's slightly different than classified information. What people need to understand about the Espionage Act, you know, a lot of people, I've heard, you know, Senator Graham and others have argued that how could they charge Trump with espionage? And in point of fact, they have not charged Trump with espionage. The Espionage Act, as you mentioned, ushered into federal law not just espionage crimes, but a series of crimes. There are there's six main subsections of the act, and within them are subsets that set forth crimes. So we're talking about, you know, somewhere, or, you know, 10, 12 crimes that are defined by the it's actually in the federal code. It's not called the Espionage Act. It's called Transmission of National Defense Information. But the crimes range from the very serious at the top, which are really traditional espionage type crimes, to at the very bottom, crimes that are not espionage, but direct themselves to the mishandling of classified information by government officials who are privileged to have it and are therefore required to follow the rules for safeguarding it. So there are a number of crimes. Some of them it's fair to describe as espionage type crimes, but that's not the crimes we're talking about here.
So the confusion here is that the act is not necessarily named for what it seeks to prohibit. And you give many examples of that in contemporary time. The Inflation Reduction Act is about green technology. And the Espionage Act of 1917 was about protecting national defense issues.
Correct. I mean, I prosecuted terrorists in the 1990s for the crime known in federal law as seditious conspiracy. But the word sedition only appears in the title of the statute. When you get down to the charging language, what I actually charged them with was conspiring to levy war against the United States. So sedition is in the title of the statute, but the crimes are not what you would think of as broadly sedition, even though they're obviously related.
And we come to the argument that I hear routinely now. What about, and then fill in the blank, Hillary Clinton, etc.? It's called selective prosecution. If I understand your presentation correctly, this was a very powerful argument before yesterday. How so, Andy?
Well, I think it'll continue to be a powerful argument, John, in terms of political rhetoric. I think it's very effective to argue to people that we have a two-tiered justice system where the quality of justice, somebody who is accused or somebody who's within the realm of people who could be accused, the quality of justice a person gets seems to depend on their partisan affiliation or their connections to powerful people rather than an even-handed application of the law. So because we're talking about a legal prosecution that takes place within a political context, I think that will continue to have that argument about selective prosecution will continue to have resonance politically. The problem with it legally is that once the prosecutor decides to bring the case, selective prosecution is a motion or a claim by the defense that routinely fails. It fails legally because for President Trump to make the argument that he's been selectively prosecuted, he wouldn't be able to argue in court, hey, compare me to Hillary Clinton. What he would have to do under the legal test is compare me to everyone else who is prosecuted under the Espionage Act or under the obstruction statutes. And the fact of the matter is he won't be able to show he's been singled out if that's the group that he gets compared to, because people really do get prosecuted for retaining classified information in unauthorized places. And they routinely get prosecuted for obstruction. So he is being treated unfairly if the only comparison is Hillary Clinton. But as far as the legal test is concerned, he won't be able to persuade the court that he's being singled out. And it really doesn't work, John, as a jury argument at trial, because the jury is going to be told that the only issue for them to consider is whether the government has proved Trump's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, not whether somebody who committed an allegedly similar crime wasn't prosecuted but should have been.
If I read you correctly, this was a decision the prosecutor made before the indictment was handed down. He asked himself, or the team asked, is this selective prosecution? And they made the decision that it is not. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's fair, John. And I think you would also argue that they didn't just make that among themselves. They invited, actually, it was on the request of the Trump legal team. But Jack Smith, the prosecutor, did meet with Trump's lawyers in the days before the indictment was returned and heard all their arguments for why he shouldn't be charged.
I'm speaking with Andrew McCarthy of the National Review Online, reviewing three different kinds of remarks that you hear routinely following the indictment of the former president. We're going to turn now to something that Andy's teaching me about. It's called forum shopping. Why is the case being brought in Florida and not in D.C., where we know there are opinions? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Lennon.